Welcome to the Mind Crank Podcast with your hosts, Connor Bryant and Max Brown. Tonight, they will be taking you on an enchanted evening through the magical world of Standard. Enjoy.
Welcome to your enchanted evening of Magic Origin Standard, as our wonderful evening DJ hosts, Matt Hart, explained to you earlier. My name is Connor Bryant. I'll be your host. And I have Matt Brown with me today to discuss some results.
Hi again, Connor.
How are you doing, buddy?
That's good. It's good. Things are looking up, getting ready to play some Standard.
Are you excited? Max and I are making a trip to SCG Regionals to nearby Liverpool, New York, secretly Syracuse, New York. And we're going to go crush some regionals.
So. Oh, it's not in the city of Syracuse?
It's not in the city of Syracuse. Right. Which, like,
well, that's good.
It's a bit of a tilt, because I'm a big fan of the Orange, but it's whatever.
Wait, is the college in the city of Syracuse?
I think it's, like, just outside the city of Syracuse.
All right.
I'm not sure.
Maybe it's in Liverpool.
Maybe it is. Maybe that's the real secret.
They have SCG regionals
isn't,
there.
Isn't... Aren't the Beatles from Liverpool? Isn't that how that works?
Yes, Liverpool, New York.
Okay. Well, this week we have some exciting results from SCG Richmond. And Matt's run. I've never been so excited after seeing... Like, all right, Sunday, I worked all morning at my grandparents' farm, like, painting a fence or something. And, like, get home, I'm hot and sweaty.
You painted a fence?
I did paint a fence.
Okay.
And so, get home after hours of painting a fence. And I jump in the shower, and I get out of the shower, and I turn on some SCG coverage. And there's a Liliana Heretical Healer in play. And the person just casts a touch of company. And he has a Rally of the Ancestors in his hand. And that's, like, my dream deck. Like, I've never... I love those three cards so much. And then they were just all together.
Can we go back a second? I mean, I love this deck. So in your dream, you're naked watching SCG open coverage.
No, I'm not dressed after the shower. But,
oh, okay, okay. All right.
But
all
like, right. I was very excited.
Okay. You're naked and very excited about Collected Companies of Liliana. I mean, I'm excited too. That is something, you know, we talked about doing it in Modern. This deck's doing it in Standard. I love it. It feels like you're playing Modern in Standard.
Yeah,
you know
it feels
what I mean?
Great. Like, just this deck, we're talking about the deck that Ray Todick won the SCG Richmond with. It's just, like, the perfect deck. Like, when Rally of the Ancestors came out, right, I went to a tournament and saw someone, like, put their whole graveyard into play and give it haste and intimidate with Modus Marauder. And I was, like, sold. I was like, I want to do that. I don't know how to do it yet, but I'm going to break it. And then I spent, like, probably, like,
several weeks. I remember working a couple times with you on various rally decks.
Yeah, I was just like, Matt Brown, I'm, like, so close, but I just can't do it. Like, I had the Sedici, like, the Brute Tyrant, but I would, like, mill my deck. And then I had just, like, Abzan, but, like, it cost too much mana. And I was like, there's something here. I have to find this out. And, like, I just didn't have the tools yet. But in my deck, I had, like, Merciless Executioner, too. Like, I was close. And then this deck comes along. And I'm like, oh, Liliana is another card I wanted to break. And it's all just in the same deck.
Yeah, and Collected Companies. And come on, the deck literally has four Collected Companies
right.
in it.
And we're in love with the Coco. How can we say no?
That Coco, man.
The sweet, sweet Coco.
That sweet, sweet Coco. All right, yeah, we should talk about this deck because it is gas. It's like a really sweet combo deck. It's the type of combo deck that goes off, and even when it doesn't win, it wins the next turn.
Right.
Which is a type of combo deck that I really like. It does have, like, a couple bad cards in it, but the situations in which they're good, they're amazing. So, like, the Fleshbag Marauder slash, what's the other one called?
Merciless Executioner.
Merciless Executioner, yeah. So, the ability to play, now, this deck has five copies of it in the main and, one in the sideboard, is that? Yeah. One additional in the sideboard. The ability to kind of, like, go real up on those so that you can reliably kill creatures with Collected Company and Rally, or just, like, play it on turn two to just kind of edict your opponent and kind of get the game into the mode where you can sort of take advantage. So, like, you know, you're a Elvish Mystic deck, and you, like, really want to draw Elvish Mystic with this deck. Because when this deck plays a turn ahead of its opponent, it's extremely overwhelming and difficult to beat.
And really, like, the real thing about this deck that separates it is... One, it does have the Fleshbag Marauder and Merciless Executioner for built-in interaction. And we saw in the finals, like, Ray talks it put against Tom Anderson. And Tom was playing Bant Heroic. And just, like, Todd could literally just never win. Like, Todd's deck can't beat, like, probably more than one Aegis effect ever. And Ray was just like, collect a company to eat its effects. I'm going to rally back, eat its effects. And then Ray, like, Todd just is like, just has nothing he can do, and it was just like a huge blowout. So having that kind of interaction is really good. But what I also really liked about this deck is that Fleshbite Marauder and Merciless Executioner with a Liliana for a Cold Healer is just like, you just flip your Liliana immediately, and then you like plus two, you each discard a card, and then you can like minus your Liliana, get it back, sack it to itself, make your opponent eat it again, and you just get the sick out value. And like, the reason that this deck is really good with Rally, similar to the deck that we saw last week played by Matthew Tickle at SCG Chicago, the five-color Rally deck, you only have to cast Rally Ancestors for three. You get your Antuco Husk, your Modus Marauder, you get everything. And it's only for three mana. And winning the game for five mana is like, it's just insane. And you can kind of do it instant speed. Like, you don't win the game at instant speed.
Yeah, but a lot of times if you have Hyrule Specs and Nantuko Husk,
you just draw enough cards.
Yeah, it just, you can just cast it on their end step. If they don't counter it, you just like draw 10 cards plus whatever flush bag, Wayfinder action you also have. So like, or Liliana. So like, you basically have these cards that do something when they come into play, and then you also have Liliana, and you have the Hyrule Specs, where it means so that you can rally on their end step and like threaten to just do a bunch of dumb powerful things, like, oh, I'm gonna put a Liliana, I'm gonna flip a Liliana, put a 2/2 into play, Wayfinder twice, draw six cards, and like, okay, and make you sacrifice the creature. And like, that combination of things is like, well, not technically winning the game, is tantamount to winning the game. You know, Standard is filled with, you know, very fairish decks playing very fairish Magic, and this deck kind of hits it sideways. But I mean, going forward, what, like, this deck obviously was the perfect thing for a field full of like tons and tons of Abzan control, right?
Exactly. The metagame breakdown that SCG posted and their coverage, it had Abzan control as the biggest deck. It had 18 copies of Abzan control, I believe 14 copies of Green Red Devotion. And it's just like, these decks just can never beat this Rally of the Ancestors deck. It's like literally impossible for them to beat it. Like,
You need counter spells or specific hate cards to be effective against this deck. Counter spells are good against this deck, but really, like, if this deck's on people's radars, I would expect to see Hallowed Moonlights, Anaphens of the Foremost, additional counters, Disdainful Strokes great against this deck. What else? What do you think the reaction is going to be to the? I mean, this deck won the tournament. It's on everybody's radar. The Pro Tour is this weekend. Like, is this deck 10% of the field at the Pro Tour? Is it 20% of the field?
I don't know. It's like, so we have the Pro Tour coming up this week, and it's like, the pro teams are probably just like, a lot of them are already up in Vancouver testing, and like, we have some friends testing that we've been talking to, and it's just like, everyone's just like, I don't know, is this deck just insane? Ray just break it, and we're just like, now what? It's like, I can play more Thought Seizes. Like, I can do that. I can play more Thought Seizes. I can play maybe some Duresses in my sideboard. Have an Offenza. But this deck's just resilient to that. Like, you have collected companies. And, like, some of your cards are bad. But, like, Grim Harrisbeth against Abzan is not a terrible match card. Kind
of reasonable, yeah.
It's, like, reasonable.
You play it as a Morph and they don't even know.
If it's a Dem Protector,
that's...
that's, like, one of the things I really like about just the cons block in general. As when they said they're bringing back Morph, I was kind of worried it'd just be like, in the original printing, Morph was just like really boring. It just like wasn't that exciting really. Now it's interesting. There's decisions.
Yeah, Morph in the original printing is like, there were very few good Morph cards. There's almost none for Constructed. There was like Exalted Angel,
mm-hmm.
and in Limited, it was like a really dumb like shell game type of thing. They managed to totally avoid that with the way they did Morph, and I really liked how they did more for Limited. But for this, like, I'm really interested in, like, I was helping a friend of mine test for the upcoming Pro Tour, and he was playing this deck, and it seemed like it was smashing everything. I mean, it did have a rough game one matchup against Mono Red, but it seemed like the sideboard games, it actually couldn't lose to Mono Red, because it had the Irishan Clerics are, like, unbelievable in the matchup, and then you just get to, like, Irishan Cleric, collect a company into Irishan Cleric and Liliana. Like, you are just playing, like, you know, you're playing four Vampire Nighthawks in your deck, and cards just great again. You know, you don't have to combo kill Mono Red, you just have to live to turn six, and you can't really lose.
And honestly, like, if you just rally for three and just, like, block their board, you just win on the spot.
Yeah,
like you, Mono Red just can't beat
that. Life Link, Liliana, just like all the value cards in the world, and then you just get Arishin Clerics and just gain a bunch of life, and you put the game out of reach. I was testing with him. I was playing Sultai Control against it. It seemed like that matchup seemed a little more reasonable. Like, certainly you need dissolves to win. Like, it dissolves your best card. You need to be able to just counter these 8 very threatening spells. But that's, you know, that's a tough road to go when they have Dem Protectors for Recursion, Power Specs, which demands an answer, and can often be played in a way that you're going to get value from it, which is difficult to deal with. And just the deck just seems like really strong. Like a lot of the cards are just, even though it has some like goofy cards in it, Grim Power Specs is, you know, much less embarrassing in play than it is on paper. It's a card that, like, when it was first printed, I thought, you know, this card's pretty reasonable. I thought it might see constructive play, like, just on its merits. Maybe in, like, the mono-black aggro decks that were a thing in the format in the very beginning. But if you just look at this deck list, like, Deathmist Raptor, great card. Dem Protector, great card. Liliana, great card. Seder Wayfinder, great card. Collected Company, great card. So it's like, it has good, like, card power, and it has Elvish Mystic to accelerate its stuff out. And like I said, the bad cards, well, they're there and they'll sometimes be awkward, give you such powerful game with Liliana and Rally that it seems totally worth it, and they're secretly less bad than they look. And that's kind of the thing, is like, there's so many good creatures that, you know, casting Collected Company gets better every day. As they, every time they release 247 whatever new cards, it's just like, all right, well, 15 of them are going to be insane to hit off Collected Company. I can't wait. And, you know, these are the ones this week that are insane to hit off Collected Company.
Exactly. And it's like that's why you and I love the Coco, right? We just love, like, reasonable creatures that cost 3 mana. And Coco's like, fill them up. Put as many cards in your deck.
Just keep printing more.
Exactly. Just give me all the 3 drops, please.
Yeah.
And what I do like about this deck is, like you said, like, the cards in the deck aren't that bad. Like, who wants to thought seize the Deathmist Dem Protector deck? But you have this built-in resiliency. Like, a flip, to be honest, is a very real issue. And just, like, I don't know if playing, like, Tormod's Crypt is, like, the answer to this deck.
No, it doesn't even do anything against Collected Company. I mean, like, if Grafdigger's Cage was legal or something, that would be good. But in terms of, like, your options is pure hate cards, the best one is probably Hallowed Moonlight, since it's the only one that stops Collected Company and Rally. And that is a card that I would definitely expect to see in sideboards and possibly in main decks at the Pro Tour, especially if the teams come to the conclusion that this deck is... I think this deck is real and it's good. That's already, like, but in stone. But if people think that this deck is going to be heavily played, then the Moonlights become really attractive. They also just do a lot of stuff against other decks. Like, counter Hordling Outburst with it and draw a card for 2 mana. That's amazing, right? You can even, like, even if they don't, like, play into it, you can kind of use it for, like, minor value. You can, like, counter an Elspeth Floss. You can even counter a Rabble Master making a token. So there's just, like, lots of little things you can do for minor value that, well, you cycle this card, it's not the best, but then when you hit Collect a Company or Rally with it, it's like a huge blowout.
I agree, and I think that Hallowed Moonlight is a card that could see play. Like, the reasonable, like, graveyard hate cards or cards that hate this deck, you could play, like, Anaphens of the Foremost, but the problem is, like, this deck, one, isn't, it's kind of graveyard-centric, but not entirely graveyard-centric.
I mean, like Anaphens because it's a good card on its own that you might want to play anyway.
You could also play Agent of Erebos, that Constellation, like, 4-drop, that, like, exiles a target graveyard when you trigger Constellation. Mm-hmm. And that seems reasonable because, like, the problem with Tormod's Crypt has always been, like, I'll clear your graveyard and they just get more stuff into their graveyard later and just, like, doesn't actually beat them.
Yeah. I mean, I used to play Agent of Erebos in my sideboard of Sultai Whip for the mirrors, and it was okay. But, again, like, I think from a hate card, you really want something that is more than just countering Rally. Is more than just stopping Rally, because I think this deck, there's more to it than the card Rally of the Ancestors. Do you know what I mean? I think there's more going on here. I think you can play a more slow, grindy game with Liliana Grim Harrispex and like Nantuko Husk kind of like a, you can like kind of like slow combo, especially if you get into a situation where you have a lot of mana, and you're, you know, you're Den Protectoring, Grim Harrispexing. You know, if you get two Grim Harrispex in play and sacrifice a creature, that's it's Skullclamp. You know what I mean? Like you're
doing it.
Yeah, you're gonna quote unquote go off even without Reality Ancestors and even if your opponent had played a Tormod's Crypt a bunch of turns. You know what I mean? Like it's not stopping that really. So I think you want either the Greater Disruption needs to be backed by like a fast clock. So like, okay, you're playing Abzan aggro, then your Anafenza the Foremost is gonna be good against this deck. And it's going to be backed by a clock, so it's going to be an effective hate card. If you're Absent Control, I don't know if Anafenza is the card you want. I would be much more looking at Hallowed Moonlight, a way to get card advantage that plays into your game plan. For non-Absent decks, I just don't like Tormod's Crypt. I don't think they're good. I think if you're a blue deck, then you just want more counter spells. I think counter spells are the best thing you can do against this. I don't know. Mono red? Just kill them real fast, I guess. I don't know what they're supposed to do against this deck.
I think part of the problem for beating this deck, though, is that like when you're tuning your deck, you still have to beat everything else in the format. So like mono red had to be built in a way that it was able to beat the green red devotion decks and Obzon like control decks, and those were tough matchups. And so when you also have to beat this, it's kind of like it puts a lot of constraints in your deck. So like we're saying Anafenza the Foremost, right? Maybe an Obzon aggro. But it's like, how do I build my Obzon aggro deck to be Languish? Like, how do I do these things also?
Yeah, I don't really think that Obzon aggro is well positioned in a world of three Languish and every control. Like, it's just, Languish is insane against Obzon aggro, and I don't know that it's even a deck going forward. You know what I mean? Like, it might just be unplayable. That doesn't mean there's no decks that can play Anafenza. You could play Anafenza in this deck for the mirror if you wanted to.
And Ray had three in his sideboard. Yeah, maybe he thought other people were going to find this, or like maybe he just wanted help against the other rally deck, like the one that Matthew Tickle played last week. But it's kind of funny how he played the own answer to his deck in the sideboard.
Yeah, but it's a totally reasonable card. It could be in the main deck. I'm not exactly sure what you would cut, but I mean, it's, you know, you're an Abzan color deck, like... This card's really powerful, just really good on the merits. That said, I don't know that like sideboard against itself is the most pressing concern. I think like what you'll see happen is if there's gonna be a reaction, it's gonna be towards moving to blue control decks that are naturally better against this type of strategy. Like a deck that's like a pile of Disdainful Strokes, Dissolves and like Languish is going to be good against this deck. They're going to be able to counter the key cards and then clean up the kind of the messy garbage on the ground with Languish, and that's going to be an effective strategy for sure.
And we kind of saw this last week also. I remember watching the coverage of Chicago, and Matthew Tickle was playing Jeff Hoodland, and Jeff Hoodland was playing with the blue light top of the control deck, and Matt's deck was built in a way in which it couldn't win without comboing. And that's the thing that really sets Ray's deck apart, is him win with the combo. But so Matt's deck was trying to just get a hasty giant Nantuko Husk to kill its opponent. Well, Jeff just had a bunch of factors in play that he just blocked his Nantuko Husk.
Yeah.
And so Matt just like couldn't win. And he just like basically just milled through his deck, just trying to find a way to win, but just couldn't do it.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that the Thopters are kind of a good answer to Mogi's Marauder comboing off, and that they can block intimidate creatures. A pile of black creatures does that as well. But the Thopter is an interesting direction. Again, I think it's really the counter spells that put the kind of the screws to the Abzan Rally deck. I want to say that, like, this deck, it has, like, more kind of... Like, both Rally and Clay Company are nice against counter spells in the sense that they're instants, so you can, if you have multiple copies of them, you can... cast one on your opponent's end step to tap, force the counterspell and then untap and then cast another. But Rally on the end step isn't always gonna, depending on what's in your graveyard, isn't really always going to demand a counterspell. It's not, if you don't have Harispex, or at least Liliana, then it's a lot less threatening.
I definitely agree with that. And like, it's interesting that Ray had like no Thoughtseizes in the sideboard to try to fight through stuff, but I think that he can generally grind people out. And so I think he wasn't really trying to go towards that.
Yeah, I wonder if there's, maybe you could put, like, Brain Maggot in the sideboard of this deck. I don't know if that would be any good if you wanted to play counter spells.
Well, that's interesting also because, like, once you flip a Liliana, you can, like, minus get back a Brain Maggot.
And yeah,
like,
and you then kind of protect. Put it away for yeah.
whatever. But I do like this deck. I mean, I love this deck. I'm really excited that, like, this exists. I'm really happy it's in the format. I've, like, never been more excited to, like, turn on SCQ coverage and see, like, my favorite cards in play.
Yeah, and, like, if you, at home, you want to try this deck, we're actually, later on in the show, we're going to have a promo code for you to use on flipsidegaming.com. We're going to have $2 Rally of the Ancestors, limit, you know, 4 per customer, but you can get your playset for $8 on our website. We'll give you a promo code later on at the end of the show, so listen for that if you want to get your Abzan Rally on.
All right, so unfortunately, we cannot talk about Rally of the Ancestors for the whole podcast.
It is sad.
As much as I would love to. But there were other decks in the top 8. So let's talk about these ones. So in first place, we obviously had Heartthrob Abzan Rally played by Ray Todick. Second place, we had Bant Heroic played by Tom Anderson. Third place, Abzan Control played by Chris Calhoun. Fourth place, Bant Heroic played by Chris Van Meter. Fifth place, played by we had Rob Vaughn in fifth place with Saltai Control. Sixth place, Mono Red Aggro, played by Ash Derbeck. Seventh place, Green Red Ramp, which was an interesting deck, played by Adam Bilikowski. And in eighth place, we had Abzan Constellation, played by John Taylor. So it's interesting to see the heroic decks do well again.
Yeah.
Like, Logan Mines got second last week, and we thought maybe people would adjust, but like I think the problem is that Sacrifice Outlets from a spell based facet, not like a Merciless Executioner, are just kind of like poorly positioned against the format. I think that there's a lot of, like, say, the Wayfinders floating around, a lot of like Nissas that aren't anywhere near flipping, a lot of like Elder's Mystics that don't matter. Like, yeah. Against Green Devotion, like an Edict is just like pretty bad. And so I think that it's interesting to see the heroic strategy doing well again.
It's tough because there's actually like there's a lot of Edict effects in standard that are playable. There's Cackling Doom, which is. Or Crackling Doom. I always call it Cackling Doom. I think that's a better name. I should just change it. Yeah. Drop the R.
I'm down.
Crackling Doom and Foul Tongue Invocation, which are both kind of really good spells. The problem is that Foul Tongue Invocation, you know, Esper Dragons has kind of fallen out of favor as a control deck in favor of the Thopter shell as opposed to the Dragon shell to go along with your blue counterspell deck. So that kind of knocks Foul Tongue off the table. And then the other deck, which could play Foul Tongue and Crackling Doom, was Mardu Dragons. But it doesn't seem like Mardu Dragons really performed well in this field. You know, I don't know if that's because it's poorly positioned or people have just dropped it in favor of, like, some new toys. It's, but you know, I could totally see, like, Mardu Dragons making a resurgence, for example. It certainly has the tools to beat heroic, ban heroic, right? So that's the type of interesting thing. Like, heroic definitely thrives in an edict-less or edict-free format. The rally deck has lots of edicts, but you know it's not like you know one person played this rally deck, right? And it's not like all the and then won the tournament. So it's not like the heroic deck. The success of it was a comment on its matchup versus the rally deck. It actually isn't, right? So, I think, like, the question is for people playing heroic is, like, can I even play this deck if people are going to be jamming the rally deck? Like, it just seems like it's just such a nightmare.
And I feel like the heroic deck did well. I mean, for all we know, the only time that heroic versus rally ever occurred in the tournament was in the finals when Ray kind of just smashed Todd.
Yeah.
And Todd Anderson was just really far behind. But, like, what I like about the Bant Heroic deck is, like, we're still early on in the format. Like, people, like, we haven't had the Pro Tour yet to, like, define everything. We have, like, 1 week of results. Like, people are still showing up with their brews and, like,
yeah,
Heroic is really good at that. Like, it's just a blatantly powerful deck.
Unfortunately, it's powerful. I mean, I think playing against Heroic is miserable. But that's like my personal bias.
The thing with playing against Heroic is either like all your spells get countered, they draw a million cards, and you have no chance ever, or you kill their first creature, then no magic happens after that, and then it's just miserable there too. It's like, yeah, there's only so much fun.
It leads to few interesting games. The deck plays a lot of blowouts one side or the other. It has uneven draws, and it has to keep hands that are really, really, really reliant on not getting their one creature Thoughtseize or not getting their one protection spell Thoughtseize. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a very fragile deck, and I don't really love the style of game that it leads to. That said, it's good. It's really powerful. It kills really fast. It can draw a bunch of cards. It has good resiliency for a deck that you wouldn't normally think would have resiliency. And Monastery Mentor and Dromoka's Command are just really good. There's good, powerful cards, and the deck is surprisingly adept at playing normal Magic, even though it's still kind of a combo deck.
Yeah, almost. it's a very linear deck. I mean, having Treasure Cruise in your deck just buys you so much when people are trying to prime resources with you.
Yeah.
But like you said, like, the Mentor and Dromoka's Command are just generally blatantly powerful cards in the format, but then they're also just, like, insane in that deck.
Yeah.
Like, Mentor just, like, goes wide where the deck, like, generally goes tall, so, like, Mentor is very good against those EDH effects that generally crush you.
Right.
And, like, Dromoka's Command is just, like...
The center, like...
It's just such a huge... Every time you cast it, it's just so insane. You're like, I get two counters, you lose a creature, or, like, it's just literally a blowout every time it happens.
Yeah, yeah. The way Dromoka's Command interacts with Heroic, is just, like, real... Just, like, really obnoxious and, like, leads to things where you're just like, okay, well, my guy... I got to scry one, kill your creature, put 2+1+1 counters on my guy, you know, and it's just like, and then I'm going to attack you for 10 unblockable. And it's just like, okay, well, this game's extremely over. What are you going to do? Dromoka's Command, man.
Yeah, it's like the percentages for the deck are, like, really close. Like, I think this matchup against, like, Mono Red's, like, reasonably close. It's like, I think Red's a little bit favored, but the games never, ever feel close.
They're just all one-sided.
Huge blowouts, and it's definitely a good deck, and it's something that we've seen literally since, like, almost week one in the format. Like, we thought it's been around the whole time, so it's interesting to see it still surviving. But so another deck I want to talk about in the top eight was the Soul Tide Control deck by Rob Vaughn, and so this deck's really interesting. I actually play test against this deck a little bit also. And
I was playing with this deck, or with a version of this deck.
Something similar. Yeah. I think that Jace in this deck is just so powerful. I think that's, like, the reason you play this deck. I think the version I was playtesting against had Deathmist Raptors in it, so it was just, like, more of a Sultain Megamorph deck. But what's so insane about this deck is, like, Den Protector and Jace are very Snapcaster-esque. They're, like, two mana... They're, like, cheap cards that get you head-on card advantage and then leave something behind. And that's just so powerful to me. It's, like, when you see something like that, you just have to, like, but how do I play this? And so you also get to play these, like, Snapcaster similar cards, like,
yeah,
two mana value creatures alongside four Dig Through Time, and also, like, some of the best answers in the format.
I mean, what
so, like, Rob has, like, Languish, Thoughtseize, Hero's Downfall,
yeah,
and Soul Tide Charm, too. Soul Tide Charm is very good right now. So I like this deck a lot. And, like, I think this deck is something that people will be looking at going to the Pro Tour, and I think that it's something that people will definitely play. My concern is that it's, like, very similar to Obzon. So if you're like, okay, I made this deck, like, whatever, I made my deck, it beats Obzon. I think generally you're going to beat Soul Tide, unless you're really dependent on, like, a rally-style deck where you're resolving one spell, because this does have access to, like, Dissolves and Death.
So the key difference to me between this and Obzon is that Obzon competes on resource volume, where this deck competes on resource quality. So your deck has amazing card selection, right? You get to see lots of cards with Jace. You get to rebuy the perfect card for the situation with Den Protector. You play one ofs in Apex Predator and Ugin. And your spell suite, your mix of spells, you have a variety of different effects across a variety of different casting costs. So you have a very cheap interactive spell in Thoughtseize. You have a big sweeper in Languish. You have point removal in Downfall, Bile Blight, Murderous Cut. And so you just have, like, this huge, like, and you have Dissolve and Disdainful Stroke. So across, you have similar effects across multiple casting costs, and you have Dig Through Time. So you just get to see exactly the right card for the right situation. And, you know, this deck's hard to play, but you can craft kind of spontaneous game plans, you know, rebuy the important cards, and this deck really appeals to me. I love this style.
And, like, we've talked about how Dig Through Time facilitates a type of deck building that it you want to differentiate your answers. Like, you are benefited by having a different range of answers. Another card that does that is Death Protector, because it kind of, like, gives you that pseudo-toolbox. And another card that does that is Jace. So yeah. This deck basically just does... It basically puts all the cards in the format that reward it for playing different kinds of answers. It's like, okay, I want to be able to play all my different answers to answer stuff. What's the cards that reward me for this the most? And it puts 11 copies of those cards in the deck. Like, Garrick Apex Rider is, like, obviously not very good in the early games. So you just loot it away with Jace, or you just don't buy it back, or you just don't take it out Dig Through Time. But it's just, like, insane when you're, like, playing that kind of, like, Ugin sub game, where it's like, my opponent has Ugin, I have Ugin. Here it's just like the trump because it comes out on 7.
Right.
Like, they like lose their Udian to kill it, and if they just like minus to like the rest of your board, you just like murder their Udian with their like Garrick plus or whatever. Like, this deck is really, really interesting to me, and I like how Assault Tide Charms is just like flexible than what the cards already are. So I think this deck is awesome. I think this deck will see play at the Pro Tour.
It's just like you can just by looking at the deck list, you can see the difference between this deck and Abzan Control. And that Abzan Control has a lot of 4-ofs. It's like, okay, Siege Rhino's best card, bam, 4 of it. Like, Heroes Downfall's best card, bam, 4. I mean, this deck also has 4 Heroes Downfall. But they're like Abzan Charms best card, 4 of it. You know what I mean? So Abzan is, you know, it's really trying to be like, I have the answer to everything, and my resources trade one for one. And this deck is such a different style of deck build. And what I really like about it is that the format's so big right now. The format's 8 sets, and so there's good spells across every casting, and it's so important to have that, right? Like, a control deck, just as an aggro deck needs a curve of creatures, a control deck needs a curve of removal spells, or removal spells or answer cards. And this deck does it, like, if you just look at the removal suite, it does it in such an elegant way, right? Like, 2 Bottle White, 2 Disdainful Stroke, 2 Dissolve, 4 Heroes Unfold, 1 Murderous Cut, 2 Soul Tide Charm, 3 Language, 2 Thoughtseize. And it's like, okay, that's so, like, you could, like, graph that out in your head, and it's like beautiful, like flat peaking in the middle at 3 curve, and it's just like, okay, the person who, you know, I don't know necessarily that Robert Vaughn built this deck out of by himself, but the person who built this removal suite put a lot of thought into it, and like it really shows, and like it has a result to show for that.
Exactly. And like, if Robert, like, if I mean, I've seen like Rob Vaughn make different deck lists, and like he's like kind of like a regional grinder, like,
yeah, he's a known player, absolutely.
And like, he generally builds really good decks. I like his deck building, but like, you said the perfect word, the deck building is just like elegant. Just like the Abzan deck is just like, moo, I hope my Siege Rhino answers what you're doing, moo, I hope my Elspeth answers what you're doing. And this deck's like, I'm gonna find like the perfect card, and like, I'm gonna like rest you, like, you're like,
it's much more finesse.
Lullaby. It's like so finesse,
it's much more finesse than Abzan, absolutely.
Compared to like. Moo, Siege Rhino, Moo, like Death Disruptor, just like all these just like blatantly powerful cards. So this deck is cool. I like this deck a lot.
Did you want to talk about the green red ramp deck?
Okay, so in 7th place there was a green red ramp deck. So this deck is way different than Green Red Devotion. So this deck focuses on basically 4 CDM ridden. So it's like, it has the mana accelerants, so it's like 10 mana accelerants. It has a bunch of dragons. But what's really interesting about this deck is it's basically just trying to get ferocious on CDN written. So you've got 3 Serac to the Hunt Caller, 2 Yasova Dragon Claw, which is basically just a 3 mana 4 power creature, 4 Thunderbreak Regent. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to put into play Xenagos, God of Revels, or Serac the Hunt Caller, and a Tarka World Render.
And just so, 16, yeah.
Just get them. Just like, this is my giant thing. It has haste. Like, duck. Like, I mean, and the most beautiful thing about this deck list is not the Atarker World Render. It's the 4 Gaia's Revenge in the sideboard. It's just so beautiful. It's just so perfect. Like, this just, like, I just want to play this deck so bad.
Okay, let's say there was, you could play as many, we were playing pretend Magic Four are exactly the same as standard, except you play any number of Gaia's Revenges. How many Gaia's Revenges would you put in the sideboard of this deck if you could play any number? I mean, you can't play more than 15, but...
Probably 5. I think 5 would be the right
number. 5 would be the perfect number?
Like, imagine your poor blue-black control opponent's just like...
When you cast your fifth Gaia's
Revenge. That's a new one, too. But, like, when they're like, all right, I'll let his Zeding God resolve. I'll just counter everything else or kill it. Which is, like, a tough spot. And then you're just, like, tap 7 lands, and you're just, like, Gaia's Revenge.
Yeah.
And there's, like...
And you're just literally, what is that, 16, yeah?
Yeah, get you. 16. Nice downfall. Haste. Yeah, nice downfall, nerd. Yeah. Nice downfall. Those decks gas. I don't know if this is a real strategy in the standard format. Like,
there's some cards in here that are suspect. I mean,
you still have a Dragon Claws. Yeah, not a great card.
That's the one that like, jumps out at me.
I think
is
like just play Boonsader. Like, he has Flash. Like, it sets you up. Like, I actually played a green red devotion deck at the Invitational in Columbus, somewhat similar to this. And you and I talked about it. Where it's like, See the Unwritten is this like insane on Magic card. It's just like blatantly powerful in the standard format. And you can put just like giant things into play, which is gas, but it's just like you have to play some stinky cards. Like, I had to play Boonsader in my deck, but I really did not want Boonsader.
What I don't like about Yasova Dragonclaw is that you can't even reveal it to Draconic Roar.
Yeah. We would need a flavor judge on that.
Yeah, call the flavor judge.
He's a Dragonclaw, how's he not a dragon? Like, those are my questions.
A dragon's claw that's like part of a dragon. Alright, whatever.
I mean,
it doesn't have Thunderbreak in it, I guess.
Yeah, this is the things we talked about when we tell people we're playtesting, right? We're like, why can't we drive the Chronic Core with Yasova Dragonclaw? Man, I can't believe I didn't win the tournament.
Yeah. There's one more deck I want to talk about, Connor, and that's Jim Davis's 10th place blue-black control deck. Last week, we talked about the Jeff Hoogelin blue-white control deck, and this deck is, the spells in the deck are really, really similar to... the blue-white control deck in terms of, like, how many slots are dedicated to what. Like, for example, 4 Dissolve, 3 Clash of Wills, 4 Dig Through Time. You know, that's the same as what we saw. What's sweet in Jim Davis's deck is what I like is the Artificer's Epiphany. I like this card a lot. The 3 main deck Ashioks, a card I really like a lot. I think Ashiok is... like, excellent, always super underrated, like, a big draw as to why I would want to play blue-black instead of blue-white. And then, of course, just, like, Hero's Downfall is so much better than any of the white removal spells. That's another really big reason, and Languish is also really, really good. So it's like, this deck is, like, took all the good things I liked about the blue-white control deck, which was the Hangerback Walkers, which I like, the Thopter Spinehackers, which are like the 3 Clash of Wills. 3 Clash of Wills, we talk about this card, is fucking, it's real good. Clash of Wills is real good in the format. And it just got rid of all the, you know, all the crappy white removal spells and replaced them with Hero's Downfall, Ultimate Price, Crux of Fate, Languish. And that's what this deck deserves. That's what Hangerback Walker deserves, is to be in the same deck with Hero's Downfall.
I mean, let's be honest. Hangerback Walker is the hero we need, but we don't deserve it.
We don't deserve it. That's fair.
What I do like about this deck is, like, I like how Ashiok and Thopter Spy Network kind of let you tap out over earlier in the game and start, like, progressing your own game plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what we see.
I also like that he's actually playing 4 Darksteel Citadels.
Yeah, to like, trigger Jim's them. Not a madman, yeah. Like Jeff Hoodlin. Like, Jim's like, I should probably play 4 Darksteel Citadels in my deck. The other thing I really like about this deck is that you kind of move everything down the curve. And so you don't have, like, End of Hostilities is, like, he only has 1 Crux and 3 Languish, where, like, Jeff had more End of Hostilities, yeah. More Elspeths, and Jeff had a main deck Ugin. But Jeff was trying to go bigger, and I think that, like, the way you want to utilize Thopter Spy Network and, like, Artificer's Epiphany and these card advantage cards is that, like, once you have Spy Network and Epiphany kind of, like, going, you have a lot of extra cards. You just want to spend your mana, like, you just want to get your mana's worth, like, use your resources. And then just keep drawing.
And hit your land drops. This deck has 27 lands, and it never ever wants to stop playing lands. Because when it's winning, it's drawing extra cards, and it's still very mana hungry. You know, it has plenty of ways to turn more mana into more cards. So as a result, it just never ever wants to miss a land drop. And like, he's playing 27 lands. And that seems like the right number. You know what I mean? Like,
and
that's a high number, but it seems right.
Jim only has four temples, so I think he could get a little bit more gritty and put some in there. But, like, he's trying to progress his game plan early. Like, he wants to turn two untap land for a hangerback walker. And he wants to, like, do these things. And, like, so unlike Sphinx's Revelation, which was, like, how we kind of profile control bets before, like, the cons format, before our last Ender season, that deck wanted to hit land drops so that way it could just cast a Sphinx's Revelation for 10 and just bury you for advantage. But I think that the control decks now kind of more of, like, loot dig through times. So they're like, okay, I'll dig into, like, answer plus dig. And then I'll dig into answer plus dig. And I'll do that over and over again. And then I'll find my win condition. Or I'll dig into, like, answer plus Artificer's Epiphany and, like, kind of cantrip that way. So the importance of land drops isn't to cast this giant thing. But there's no Ugin. It's so that way you can just, like, cast three spells in a turn. You, like, leave up Counter Magic, play a Bioblade, and dig into more cards. And, like, that's when you're winning. That's, like, when the deck wins.
Yeah, and this deck is, like, so Thaudrish Biobank Network we talked about last week, it kills pretty fast, and it, and even before it actually kills your opponent, it puts you in a position where you practically can't lose, where, like, you've drawn, like, six extra cards and have dissolve up, and they're just pretty boned. You know, like, that's the type of situation where it's like, yeah, sure, no one really won after their opponent resolves Sphinx's Revelation for 10 either, but Dr. Spy Network can get going much earlier in the game than Sphinx's Revelation for 10. It just is a more, you know, it's not a more flexible card because Sphinx's Revelation is really open-ended, but it's a card that does more at an earlier stage in the game, and its interaction with, like, the style of play that Dig Through Time promotes, which is kind of like, all right, I mean, I don't have to find necessarily the backbreaking Ugin. I just have to find a card that's going to make me get to the, or, like, fuel me enough to get to the next Dig Through Time. Like, I'm only trying to get to the next Dig Through Time. I'm only trying to get to the next Artificer's Intuition. I'm just trying to live and interact, and then soon my Thopters are going to take over. Like, you don't have to, like slam the hammer down when, you know, you cruxify your hangerback walker with six counters, and, like, your opponent's just going to die to Thopters. It's just, like, you just have a lot of flexibility, a lot of ways to spend your mana, and that's really attractive in a control deck.
I agree. I think that utilizing that mana is, like, what this deck's advantage is. Another deck that I really liked in the top eight was Ash Durbet's Mono Red deck. So the numbers are a little weird to me. She has, like, twos and, like, of certain cards and, like, kind of did, like, some hedging. But she played two Chandra Fire Kaladesh. And so everyone's just been like, oh, Chandra's, like, kind of stinky. Like, the card's just, like, a lot of work to flip. And, like, once she flips, she's, like, not that good. And it's just, like, these creature planeswalkers are just so swingy the turn they flip. It's just, like, maybe they're just all good. Like, Tythian's been, like, pretty medium to me because it's just, like, it's a lot closer to a 2-1 than it is to a planeswalker. And
Right, it's a one drop. You know, exactly. You can't make it like a one drop planeswalker.
Right, it can't be like attack and flip, because then the games are just like busted. I mean, there's like, I think there's some definitely interesting ways to like exploit Kytheon. Like, I would love to play with like dash creatures or like haste creatures or like play like a red white deck where I've like got like Monastery Swift Spears and Lightning Berserkers and Zergos and like also like four Razilon, four Dragon Fodders and like maybe some Anthem effects, things like that. These are like things I want to look into. But I think that Chandra is a really interesting card because you can just like attack with her. Like you just like, she just attacks and you play a spell and then she flips. And it's just like, now you have to deal with whatever their spell was and like she flips. It's just like, I don't know if she's going to be good in this standard, because when standard's really big, like a 3-mana spell that doesn't have a huge impact on the board is tough.
Yeah, but it's
just interesting. Like to see the card on the top 8 list, like,
it's hopeful. 15, it's hopeful that this is a good card, right?
But there's a glimmer of hope, and it's just like she played 15 rounds of Magic, and she did well. Ashtar by like top eight of the tournament, and it's like she couldn't have top eight of the tournament unless like Chandra was at least like solid. And so it gives me hope that these cards are all good, because I like this card. I think this card's really interesting, and just like having something that's so proactive as a planeswalker that early in the game is really powerful. It's just something we need to just like We just need to make sure they're not broken. And, like, we need to think about how to break these cards.
Yeah. To be honest, like, Chandra for sure was the Planeswalker that I was least excited about.
It just looks like another Chandra card. It's just like, oh, it does damage. Yeah. It doesn't really matter.
I mean,
it's that, like, kind of gimmicky, like, whatever. Like, it just looks like the other Chandra that is kind of bad.
Well, it's interesting because, like, the other Chandra that's legal in the standard is probably the best one.
Oh, Chandra Powermaster's great.
Yeah, like, it's probably the best one they've ever printed. Kind of, Wizards had a tendency to print terrible Chandra after terrible Chandra, kind of.
Nalar killed Baneslayer Angel in the standard. That was a thing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Nalar was okay, but not, whatever, then... The one in Zendikar was real bad. Chandra Blaze.
Oh, you mean the 6-mana red card? Yeah. That was a bad one? Who would have guessed?
The Chandra Blaze was real bad, although I did play it in all in red. turn one, we both mulligan to 3. That's a pretty sweet play.
Well, do some calamity or whatever that card is.
Yeah.
So that's a solid deck. I wish that card was modern. Like, I wish the deck was modern playable.
Yeah, so well, I banned all that. The rituals that made it good.
Yeah, you can't play Seething Song.
Or Rite of Flame.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Never mind. That's sad. I guess it's really not, like, great magic. You just kill their lands or discard their hand. Okay, that's fair.
It was a really obnoxious deck. Okay. I mean, you played... played 4 main deck Chalice of the Void.
God. God bless magic. You know what decks should be. When you just, like, 4 Chalice and then, like, some number of Trisphere, and you're just like... Dude, you're just a jerk. Well, you just don't want to play magic.
It's not like you have Ancient Tombs or whatever. You're just like Chalice of the Void, and you're like, oh, Chalice of the Void for 2, and it's like, your deck has a bunch of rituals in it that cost 2. Like, you're just like, hope it hurts them worse.
You're like, just like, sweet deck building.
Yeah. Okay, and then there's the, what was the other Chandra? The one that was like an M13 and M13.
Oh, the fire branded one?
Yeah, that one's real terrible, right?
That's probably, like, minus fork or whatever, plus 1 ping.
Yeah.
The problem is, like, on these cards, like, the damage is just never relevant to, like, the time of game that's, like, happening. It's just, that's why Chandra Nalar was, like, close, because it was, like, 5 mana, I can, like, deal 5 damage. But this Chandra's really interesting, because you can play it on turn 3, and, like, you can flip it. Like, it's just, like, kind of, like, a low...
Well, this Chandra's really, really interesting in that... It doesn't get threatened by your opponent's creatures. So, all the other Chandras are default Planeswalkers, right? So
this one's cool because it's not.
Right, yeah, because it's not, right? The other ones, you play it, and if your opponent has a dumb green creature, none of the Chandras do anything, right? They just, I guess Chandra Nalar can deal 5 damage to it, but then it's just, you just played a 5-mana, 5 damage removal spell. Like, that's not particularly good.
The turn's, like, not even good.
Yeah, and then the other ones just don't do anything to a creature. They just get killed by it. This one, at least, you can, if they don't have a removal spell, you at least have the chance to untap and do something cool with it. And, you know, maybe it's something, I don't know, it still just looks so Grey Ogre to me. That's the problem.
It's very Grey Ogre looking. But, I mean...
It looks suspiciously like a Grey Ogre.
I am really upset about new standard. And as we promised, as earlier in the podcast, we do have a promo code for you guys on Rally the Ancestors. So if you go on flipsidegaming.com and you put 4 Rally the Ancestors in your cart, and so it's limit 4 per customer, and you put a promo code in called Rally the Pure, because my nickname is Connor the Pure.
So Rally the Pure, no spaces. That's the promo code. Your Rally the Ancestors will cost $2 a piece.
And I believe they're $4, like, sold out on Star State Games.
Yeah, yeah. It's an aggressive price. It's good.
It's a good deal. Flipside Gaming knows deals.
Yeah, we'll make you some deals. So flipsidegaming.com, buy 1, 2, 3, or yes, 4 Rally the Ancestors.
Oh, quad. We're going quad laser.
Yeah, this is a card you definitely want the full quad laser on.
I mean, I already have like 12, like, under my pillow at home, but they're definitely a sweet one.
Yeah, so it's Rally the, one more time, it's Rally the Pure without spaces. Yeah.
Definitely check that out and get your Rally the Ancestors before Star State Games Regionals this week. I think that's like the most, probably the biggest tournament a lot of people have.
Yeah. Well, people can watch the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, I wish, I'm kind of sad I'm going to the tournament, but I already told you guys I would go. Because I generally just like to, you know, at home and just like watch the Pro Tour during the Pro Tour weekend. Eat
some Pringles or whatever.
Yeah, just like chill in my boxers and just watch the Pro Tour, and it just sounds like a delight. But,
Wait, in this dream, you're naked as well?
Yes.
Okay.
And there's just Lilianas everywhere. Quick other things I want to talk about is, so I don't know if you guys know it, but I love Legacy Goblins. It was like the deck I learned how to play, like competitive match with. And 2 weeks in a row, in Star State Games Legacy Premier IQs on Sunday, we've got Goblins. Twice. They're back, baby. Mod Fanatic, or not Mod Fanatic.
that one's not back.
That one's not back. That one's securely in like 1999 where it belongs. Goblin Lackey.
Okay.
Two-time heavyweight world champion is back.
Debatable.
He's back to tango with Deathray Shaman, who's still a 1-2 for no explicable reason.
Yeah, I'm sorry to, I mean, like, you know.
Let me down easy, please.
Connor, Goblins. It's cute. They're, you know, hey, it's a goblin. Look at them. Like, ah, it's a goblin.
Those little green guys. They're so cute.
They're, yeah, like, I don't think this deck is good. I realized, 2 weeks in a row, it top 16.
Like an 80-person.
A premier IQ.
Like an 80-person premier IQ?
In Richmond, Virginia.
And Chicago.
In the Legacy format. But, and I would not overreact to that information. Although, I'll let you down easy, Connor.
Dude, did you know that if you, like, Goblin Matron for a tar fire, and then you kill something, it's just like Flame Punk Comet. It's just like it. It's just...
I mean, your Goblin Matron's a 1-1. That's the that would be the first.
And it only deals 2 points, and it grows Tarmogoyf. Okay, all right, that's fair. Another interesting thing that I saw this week is, so I was working at the store, and I was like working the Modern tournament,
uh-huh.
And someone's like, "All right, cast Summoning Trap." So all of a sudden, like I'm very excited. Someone's cast Summoning Trap. All
right, I'm on board.
And they hit Internal Witness, and then they ball back their Summoning Trap because someone like remanded their like secure Tribe Elder or something, and then they. Then Summoning Trap again, and then they hit a Restoration Angel,
uh-huh.
And then Summoning Trap again, so like, they blinked the Witness, got back Summoning Trap, and then they got TTGT,
uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, I was just very excited, like, I was like, literally, like, I was like, had to go and, like, sit down and take a deep breath, because I was so excited, and then
so
I watched...
So they won on turn two.
This is not, yeah, they won on turn two, they just made infinite TTGTs.
Okay.
It was pretty insane. And then... I watched
you mean Infinite Restoration Angels?
Infinite TTG is not as good as Infinite Restoration Angels. Although he does break mirrors, so that's a lot of mirrors. But, and then, another game I'm watching, and she summoning traps again, and she hits Woodland Bellower, and I was like, that's my favorite card.
Woodland Bellower?
Yeah, it's big, dumb, and green, that's all I need. Like, and then she got Tutor for Eternal Witness, and then got Resto Angel, blinked the Woodland Bellower, got another Eternal Witness, and then hit another TTGT, and I was just like, I'm going home and building this deck right now.
All
right,
so, well, we talked about this deck a little bit before the show, and I already rebuilt it.
You know what card we're going to get now? Maybe we'll talk about this next week. We'll give like a regionals report.
Yeah.
We'll talk about this deck next week.
Just,
I want to tutor for, I want to Summoning Trap, and I want to hit Woodland Bellower, and I want to get Eternal Witness, and I want to get TTGT off the second Summoning Trap, and then I want to copy my Woodland Bellower, and then go to Bounding Crisis, and untap my KTGT, and then give it Bounding Crisis, and that's all I want to do in my life, and that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like, that's next week, we promise, we'll talk all about Bounding Crisis
okay,
and
okay,
Woodland
before,
Bellower.
Before we wrap up the podcast, though, Matt's wrong. What are you going to play at SCG Regionals in beautiful, scenic Liverpool, New York?
Right now I'm leaning towards playing the Mono White Devotion Splash Blue. Just because I built it and I just want to try it.
Because we played it last week.
Because we played it last week. And I'm going to put more Disdainful Strokes in it so I can beat... And probably Hallowed Moonlight. So I can beat... I can beat some Rally decks.
Yeah, Rally the Heartthrobs. That deck is definitely sweet. And if you guys want to listen to us talk about that deck, you can listen to last week's episode.
Yeah.
Episode 6, Devotion to Obzon, I believe. where we talked about the Mono White Splash Blue.
Yeah, the Mono White Splash Blue.
I believe that, so I built a sweet little member. As you guys probably can guess, I love me some green creatures that are like probably not that good. But, so I'm going to play green / black elves.
Okay,
like,
I love it.
With like Obelisk of Urd and just beat people down with like 3/3 elves on my turn 4. And that's like, I think that that's reasonable. Like,
yeah, Urd is the word.
Yeah, Urd is the word. And, I think this deck, it just seems sweet. It's just, like, a really aggressive deck that has, like, a Fireball and, like, Shaman of the Pack. hopefully my list will get posted because I'll like win the tournament or something. That'd be kind of
nice. I hope you win the tournament, Connor.
That'd be sweet.
Or get second to me. That would also be acceptable.
I'd rather just like just not win it. I'd just rather not top eight. If I have to lose to you in the finals, I'd rather just
You'd rather not top eight than lose to me in the finals.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. But that's harsh.
I do like the elf deck. I'm pretty excited to put some green creatures in play. I might discard Siege Rhino for a week, but I'm pumped for regionals. I'm really excited for the Pro Tour. Like, good luck to our friends that are out there. Our good buddy Dan Jordan got like this close to just like randomly like
triple queuing for Pro Tours. Yeah.
So Dan top aided local Albany Grinder. Some of you may know him as a very ridiculous human, but
I wouldn't call him a local Albany Grinder.
No, he
has like two Pro Tour top 16s and two GP top 8s.
Yeah,
and
you might know his name, but he's top 8.
He's my roommate.
He is your roommate also. Him and I have eaten many like we've gone to Chipotle the other quite a few times.
Gross.
Chipotle's delicious.
I'm known for my hatred of Chipotle.
Yeah, whatever. You hate everything that's good in the world. But so Dan top 8ed GP Dallas. So Dan basically just like he just like falls off the Pro Tour. And then just like kind of really doesn't care, just like does other stuff, and then just like goes to a GP, spikes it, gets back to the Pro Tour. But he did that with Jersey,
yeah.
And then that's his usual. Did it with Dallas.
That's his mode of operation.
Yeah, he's like, oh, people in the Pro Tour are cool. I want to go hang out with them, and then just like wins the tournament and just back on. So if he won the GP Dallas, though, he would have like queued off of silver to go to Vancouver, and then he would have just like queued for two more Pro Tours.
Right, for the one that Dallas qualifies for, which is Minneapolis, I think.
No, Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. Yeah. That's like the same thing.
Fair.
They're very. They sound very similar.
Cold M's in the Midwest.
Yeah, that place. And then whatever the next one is, which I think they haven't announced yet.
Yeah.
But it will probably be in Europe.
Probably. Yeah.
Just based on the scheduling. All right, but we gotta go. We gotta do the sign-off.
So, all right, guys.
Tell the people what my Twitter handle is.
Okay, so if you guys want to hit us up, you can always contact me on Twitter, at Connor the Pure. You can always contact Matt Brown, at Mono_Brown. And you guys also can hit us up on our Facebook page for the website. So Flipside Gaming, we have, if you guys have any questions for Matt.
Yeah,
Brown,
you want to leave comments or...
You want a preview of the Woodland Bellower Spice that's in common...
Maybe we'll post something, yeah.
Maybe we will. We'll see how we're feeling. But good luck at your SEG regionals. I hope you guys enjoy watching the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
And,
what else, Connor? Try not to punt. See you next week.
See you next week. Enjoy.